The Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman produces. Thanks for dialing us in. It's 12 after 10. I'm John Williams. And Tom Gimbel's a frequent guest here, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Hey, Tom, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be with you, John Williams.
We are talking on with a couple of guests. We'll start with you about going back to work, into the offices, and so on and so forth. So some, though, people have left the state, right? I wonder if companies are starting to rethink, not only do they have to be in the office or at their home, but what if they've left town completely?
That's a different ballgame.
Yeah,
I think that's it. Things have really changed from where we were, obviously, from where we were a year ago, but where we thought we would be. We've gotten there a lot faster, and the big tech companies, as usual, lead the way. And if you remember, Google and Facebook were some of the first ones to say, oh, we won't even come back in 21, and now they're bringing people back. And I don't know if you saw the open letter from the Apple employees
No.
that they wrote, and people are unhappy, but people are coming back, and it's just the way it's going to be. It might not be 5 days a week, but it's how it's going to be.
What are Apple employees unhappy about?
That they have to come back, that Apple's getting the ship turned around from a standpoint of saying, we want our people collaborative, we want them in the office. Now, there's a real problem, like you said, if somebody got up and moved away. But most employees that I've heard of that did that talked to their employer first and asked for permission to be doing that, knowing whatever it would be, because it's obviously you're not moving away for just a year usually. But the people, there are cases of people that moved away without informing their employer, and they may have a hard time. They may lose their jobs.
It's funny because what business is of yours where I live, as long as I do the job. If I live in the suburb or if I live in California right now, I'm doing the work. So what business is it of the employer's?
Well, at the end of the day, it's the employer who writes the check. And if an employer wants their people working together, whether it's the same thing of where they put your desk or what floor you're on or what time you start. The employer takes the risk. The employer has the liability of employing, and the power that the employee has is the willingness to walk out the door.
Well, you
and
have
so employer. Go ahead.
No, finish that thought. I got another question though, but keep going.
So the employers, the risk that they take is that their employees may quit. The employees have to realize that the rules are set by the employers. That's how it works.
Well, given the market these days, it sounds like the employees are in the driver's seat a little bit, doesn't it?
Listen, unemployment is at a lifetime low right now, and we are in a situation where the employees are driving the bus to an extent. But I actually think it's a good situation. If you want choice, we live in America, and there's choice of what we do for a living and where we work. And I think that if some companies mandate 5 days a week, that's great because there's people that'll want that. And if some are hybrid or some are remote all the time, then employees can go work there. And if you don't like it, then you leave and you go someplace else. And I think eventually, in the short term, companies will end up paying a little bit more, perhaps, to get people to come into the office. And a year or 18 months from now, it'll all get a little bit closer to normal.
Hmm. So you have employees. One of your employees celebrated, what, 20 years working with you?
You got it. Yep.
Wow. I didn't mean it that way. Well, so talk to me a little bit about retention. How do you keep employees, and what advice do you have for employers out there generally?
Well, the key thing is it starts at the top, and a CEO or an owner has to know what types of culture they want to have. Is it important to their executive management team that they have people together collaborating in the office? And are they willing to sacrifice certain things? Now, I'm a big believer that it starts at the top from the standpoint of executive teams need to be in the office too. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, and you have to be doing those things. And then you have to realize the types of relationships you have with people and how it's gonna roll out to the staff. Now, I've heard people saying, you know what, we're gonna give more money to people that come in, we're gonna promote people from who are in the office. And then I've said to these folks, well, are you telling everybody that? And they go, no, they'll find out when it happens. Well, I don't necessarily think that's the right way to go either. If you're gonna treat people better if they come into the office, then you should let everybody know that that's the risk and the reward.
And will that work? Is that's an incentive, right?
Absolutely. And for years, it used to be called, combat pay for people who would go on the road and travel 3 weeks a month or 4 weeks a month. You knew you'd get paid more money to travel. It might be the same thing that if you come into the office 5 days a week, you may get paid more. You may get perks like having your parking paid for or things along those lines that companies will do to entice people to get back in. And what we have to look at is the real question is, the number one knock on CEOs or big corporations is greed, executive greed, and they want all the money and they don't increase the minimum wages and all these things. If that were the case, why wouldn't they want to eliminate all of the real estate and have everybody work from home? And the answer is because these people who've risen to the top believe there's a collaboration that exists that you can't get remotely. And secondarily, what they believe is that in order to have people trained correctly and to have people learn, you need to have all levels of the company together to pass on both history and tradition and learning how to do the job even better.
Tom Gimbel, founder, CEO, LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Nice to talk to you, Tom. Thanks for your ideas.
Thanks for having me on. Talk to you soon. Bye.
As always. Okay, Philip Weiss is next. President, Seyfarth at Work. Visit Seyfarth.com. I'll spell that for you in a second. Philip, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
A minute ago, we visited with Tom Gimbel at LaSalle Network about what it's like going back, how you incentivize people to go back into the office, or do you at all? I think you're concerned not about how you get them in there, but when they're in there, how do they look, how do they act, how do they behave, right?
Yeah, and we would have thought that getting them in is 80% of the challenge, but it's when they show up, to the surprise of many bosses and managers, that the real problems are starting, because these employees, in so many cases, have been away from coworkers, have been limited to their small pod of close family and friends, and they've developed a pattern of conduct that is often acceptable with those closest to you, but simply doesn't cut it in a professional environment. So many managers are finding their employees are really letting loose once they show up, in part because they're so happy to see one another, they're not drawing the proper lines.
Give me an example. I mean, what are we talking about?
Yeah, it's everything from, in the calls we're getting at least, it's everything from insults, the kind of barbs and biting remarks that maybe are okay with your brother or dad or even your mom, but don't work with a manager or a colleague. At one company, a graphics company we're now training, a spreadsheet was circulated among the newly returned employees wherein a few of them were ranking who had either physically expanded or aged the most during COVID. So they were crossing a couple of harassment lines almost immediately upon coming back, and over half the calls we're getting from managers, John, relate to those kind of insults. Another quick example, which will not surprise anybody, is as opposed to insults, what we might call indecency, and that relates, in our view, to people sharing too much information or asking for too much information from colleagues, like, hey, you know, I want to tell you everything about my Friday night date because it's the first date I've had in about 12 months. That kind of thing is becoming daily fodder for conversation.
Is this casualness born of Zoom, you know, where people were just chatting casually, maybe more personally longer than they would have in the office?
It is in part because some lines were allowed to get a little bit fuzzier on Zoom. You saw someone's background. You asked them about what was up on the wall behind them in a Zoom call. The other side of this is employees now are together for an eight-hour day in some cases. It may not be every day of the week, but it is a long time to be in the same room for many people. And so they're just getting into the conversations that they shouldn't, and their excitement at being together is creating this incentive to just share and share and share. And the other side of this is they're not used to being managed in person hour after hour. And one client that called us, the employees were telling the managers stuff like, you know, lay off, you're not the boss of me, or can this guy really tell me to stop talking and get back to work? And of course the answer is yes, but it's something they just weren't used to with such regularity.
People forgot what a work culture is like, it sounds like. I wonder if this happens in other countries, too. Or is this an American attitude?
You know, that's a great question. You know, we train and consult globally. It's definitely happening in other countries, but to a greater extent here. There's obviously this sort of this pride in the individual expression side of things, and that's translating into more of these inappropriate moments in the workplace. So no question, we're seeing more of it, but it's not limited to the U.S.
Insubordination, then, is that the next level of that?
That is. And that's this notion that people, just like they want to get close to employees, they're sort of chafing at a manager or supervisor telling them what to do, checking in, looking into their office or their workspace, because that's something that didn't happen, as you put it, on Zoom. And we've got to give managers a lot more tips than we typically would have expected on how to gently reintegrate people into listening to them, into behaving properly. So a lot of that has to do with showing them when you're here, you can actually witness the impacts of not performing. You can see other people needing to step up on your behalf. So you got to use the live realities to ameliorate and mitigate these employees' difficulty in adjusting.
You think there's a generational line here, Philip?
To some extent, yes. And that's partly because people that have entered the workforce for the first time more recently, they already view the job as something that might be a temporary stepping stone, something to try out. They already expect to have flexible work arrangements. And many times, companies are bringing everybody back because they want to have that camaraderie, that collaboration, and they're not making decisions based on what people require, the runway they need, and the explanations that would benefit them to work within the culture with others in the same office.
And I think there's listeners of a certain age, and I don't know where the line is, but they're listening to this, and they just shake their head at the mollycoddling we've got to do to get people to show up, act like adults, and do their damn job. That's the divide I'm thinking about.
Yeah, well, I think we have seen that in a number of environments. And the piece is, if you've been in this sort of the pod, your prior pod world, all of those expectations, all of those behavioral patterns, they have been reinforced. They have become a default for people. So now you are extracting them from that, sometimes kicking and screaming and saying, no, it's not the pod behavior. It's a professional place of work behavior that must rule here, partly because others come from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You have clients and customers walking in. We have so many reasons why we need a standard. And yes, it may be more casual than it was, but it's still a workplace.
And this is just reminding me of a little bit of what Tom Gimbel was talking about a minute ago from the LaSalle Network, though. That is, you're going to have to give them a little bit longer leash because of the psychology of the thing, but also because good employees might be difficult to find right now. You're not going to start firing people as you bring them back, so you're going to have to slow walk them back into this, aren't you?
Yes. So there needs to be, as you put it, and Tom put it, a runway of time. And you want to exhibit patience and understanding, but only up to a point. Because once, if something happens that's either severe, or you hear complaints from coworkers, customers, or clients, anything that's repeated or seriously offensive, you have to have managers who know how to step up and step in right away. So there's always this balance between knowing this will require some thoughtfulness and not losing our commitment to what really is legally an enormous risk.
Hmm. Philip Weiss, president at SyFarth at Work. It's spelled SeyFarth, SyFarth at Work, SyFarth.com. Okay, Philip, we'll visit again soon. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Next guest is Elaine Fry, proprietor of Luft Balloons. Luft Balloons is celebrating Pride Month in Chicago with an immersive pop-up experience at their showroom on West Armitage in the city. Let's talk a little bit about that and how their business has been doing. Elaine, you're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, John.
How long have you all been in business? How old is Luft Balloons?
We are entering our fifth year, so we're, you know, hitting a good pace, but a lot of people think we're only in year one because of the pandemic. We exploded, fortunately, during that time.
Exploded, really? You sold more balloons during the pandemic?
Well, so we were primarily events-driven before the pandemic, and then we had a small arm that was customer-based, and with events gone overnight, it really helped us focus on the customer and kind of expose that arm of our business. And there was a lot of people at home that, you know, wanted to spread some joy, and we did that with balloons.
Hmm. I would imagine, though, that didn't replace the lost event business, huh?
Correct. But thankfully, that's coming back now with a bang.
Yeah, is it really? That's two puns in the first minute. Is that the way this is going to go? Oh, is that what you do?
Not intentional. Maybe it's just part of ingrained in my speak, I guess, these days. But yeah, just like how the pandemic started, it ended. It just was a faucet that turned on and off. And so overnight, literally, you know, events, everyone's like ready to get out and get back together.
I think a lot of us are looking for bellwethers of the times. And if balloon sales are sort of a precursor to events and people coming back, that's very encouraging news, Elaine.
It is, because I think it gives us hope that it was never a recession or businesses were being hurt because of anything they were doing. It's purely just, you know, responding to a health crisis.
I think that point gets lost sometimes. The pandemic did not shut down businesses. The government did. The government said by these restrictions, you can no longer essentially operate your businesses. And then events that you cater to couldn't happen. Therefore, there goes your business. That's not a political statement. That's not even a criticism. That's just the reality.
Right.
You guys were told to close, essentially, or the businesses that you service. So I'm on a tangent now. I'm going to finish this thought. So when we said, well, then how much money should we give to businesses, or how much money should we send out into the marketplace or to individuals? My attitude was a lot, because we told these people they had no choice. Now you're back to business as usual, it sounds.
Yes, minus the work shortage. There's a lot of people we need on our team, so we'll take anyone who wants to blow up balloons.
I suppose Pride Month is a good one for you. That speaks to color and imagination and acceptance and coming out, right?
It sure does. We love pride. We love color. We love celebrating inclusivity, anyone and everyone. We just love to bring the joy and love.
So let's just talk about this, and I want you to tell me a little bit more about your products. But you're celebrating Pride Month with an immersive pop-up at your showroom. That's at 345 West Armitage. What do we see when we go there?
So we have created a Love is Love flag out of balloons, and it's about 20 feet long, and it goes over your head, and it's just a really cool, colorful experience. And then we have Sharpies where you can write on the balloons what Love is Love means to you, so that, you know, hopefully at the end of the month, we can have this collective wall of a visual representation of community and kindness. And, you know, it's just a way to explore what does love mean to each other.
Sounds like an Insta moment too, doesn't it? Are people going to get their pictures taken there?
You got it. Well, luckily with their iPhone, they can do that themselves. But the whole idea is, it's to spread the word through a caption and a photo.
Luft Balloons is celebrating Pride Month in Chicago with this pop-up at their showroom, 345 West Armitage. So what's the business of balloons like these days? Do you have the kind that float in the air, kind that don't float in the air? Are they Mylar? What's the business about these days?
You have hit all of the selling points of our business. We do have two divisions, one's air and one's helium. Air does not float. Helium does. We do have to make that distinction, because you'd be surprised how many people don't know that difference. So we have creations where you can kind of hang up in your home or outside the home, or put together a bouquet for a birthday or an engagement party.
You got the kind where I can make it into a wiener dog?
I have a hot dog foil, if that will do, and some puppy dog balloons.
You do see people now. It seems like decorating at parties and events with specifically designed balloons is more common. I don't remember that as a child growing up. It seems like I see that more now, right?
Yeah, because I think what we're trying to do is to tap that nostalgic chord within us from our childhood, but showing a different way to use balloons. That they don't have to be as juvenile, even though they're great as a kid, but that you can also transform that experience to be more art and supplement, you know, a birthday party when you're 40, 50, an engagement party, you know, that the balloons don't have an age, is what we're trying to hopefully sell.
Is there a best seller? Is it, you know, the number 50 or a cap and gown balloon, or I don't know. I have no idea. Is there a best seller?
You will never guess. Yes, the best seller is our grumpy cat, and it is a grumpy cat face, and it's got a party hat on it, and it says, "This is my party face." And it just makes everyone crack up.
So then what's the price range of balloons these days?
Sure. So you can buy a single balloon for $3 all the way up to, you know, we have our bursts are $129, or we do custom installs, and we'll adorn your house with thousands of balloons if you'd like.
Do people come in singing 99 Luft Balloons a lot?
All the time. But, you know, there's a certain age mark, though. So I know they're my people if they are singing that balloon.
Well, you named it Luft Balloons. It's at 345 West Armitage. One last question. You spoke to the difficulty of maybe fulfilling orders, or sounded like you alluded to that. How many people do you employ? Have you had trouble getting folks to do your work?
Sure. So we have a team of about 7, but we are looking for part-timers, and that's the struggle is real, you know. The restaurants are trying to find their people, and we, you know, usually have some of those servers supplement their schedule with us. And so everyone's kind of hurting in that middle market of needing part-time work.
Yeah, I can imagine. Luft Balloons, mm-hmm. 345 West Armitage Avenue, celebrating Pride Month. So the pop-up is from 8:30 to 3:30 on Saturday, 8:30 to 3:30, if I read this right, on Saturday, right?
Monday through Saturday.
Oh, yeah,
you can buy a ticket anytime. Yep.
Buy a ticket? Do I buy a ticket to this?
Yep. So it is the proceeds will go, part of the proceeds will go to an organization we're working with Pride, and it allows you to bring up a group up to 6 people.
Okay, fair enough then. So Luft Balloons, and again, the address is 345 West Armitage. Oh, really interesting. Nice to talk to you, Elaine. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Elaine Fry is the proprietor, the lofty goal at Luft Balloons. LuftBalloonStore.com is the website, LuftBalloonStore.com. 1244, business news continues on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Just Eat Takeaway has completed its $7.3 billion acquisition of Chicago-based Grubhub. Some changes are coming, but not many. One noticeable difference is its signature red color will change to Just Eat Takeaway's orange. Adam DeWitt will become the new Grubhub CEO, replacing co-founder Matt Maloney, who will join a 4-member management board of the Amsterdam-based parent company. No layoffs are planned at Grubhub. The company will keep its 2,800 employees, including the 1,200 at its Chicago headquarters. The Political Action Committee of Chicago-based Boeing has started donating again to federal candidates and committees after a 3-month pause. The PAC has made new donations to Republican lawmakers who oppose certifying the 2020 election results for Democrat Joe Biden. Boeing joined dozens of other companies in suspending PAC donations in the wake of the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol by supporters of Donald Trump. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Hey, Johnny, I was just thinking about it. What a bummer it is to have a food allergy. I mean,
yeah.
It just doesn't seem fair, right? Yeah. About 10% of us are allergic to some kind of food. Peanut or tree nut allergies are among the most common, and typically they show up early in life as they did for Blake Sorensen.
Yes, when I was 3 years old, I found out I had a nut allergy. My throat swells shut, going into anaphylaxis, and essentially have to go to the hospital.
Sorensen did not, as many people do, outgrow his nut allergy, but he did grow up, way up.
Yes, I went to Wisconsin, was a linebacker there for 4 years.
When he was a senior, the Badgers, a nut-free team, thanks to him.
No one on the team could have meals with nuts in them.
But that didn't stop them from winning the Big Ten and playing TCU in the Rose Bowl. Grad school then took Blake to Indiana University.
So I was in a social entrepreneurship course where we had to come up with a business idea that solves a problem.
Well, he sure had a problem. So using his 500 square foot apartment as a test kitchen, he came up with a line of snack bars that are allergy free. Instead of nuts, the bars contain seeds. So he named it Blake's Seed Based.
It went from a project to then a Kickstarter campaign where we started to get a ton of orders. And then that's when I knew, you know, we really had something.
And did he ever. Since launching a few years ago, they've sold over 1 million bars.
We have a s'mores, a blueberry lemon, and a raspberry. And then we recently launched a line of Rice Krispie Treats where we have a strawberry and a chocolate chip. And we're working on a granola. I think that will be next.
That's, again, Blake Sorensen of Blake's Seeds Based. Blake's Seed Based. That's the place online where you can find him. You can also find him all over Chicago, Jewel, Foxtrot, all of those places. And available nationwide, too. They're expanding. Turning to the Chicago Board of Trade, wheat right now is down about 17 cents. Beans are down 10. Corn is trading down about 5. A lot of weather trade still going on there. I hope you didn't buy lumber futures in early May. Futures since May 7th are down 42% as lumber continues to slide. Today's Farm to Your Belly feature. Well, the calendar's empty today. That's okay, though, because we could use a break before tomorrow's big day. Tomorrow is National Fudge Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy, I know you've got a lot of interesting stories. Let's see how many of these we can get through. You ready?
Sounds good.
Amy Guth joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's start with the United Pilots story. What's going on there?
Yeah, so we've been talking about the travel rebound. TSA reported seeing 2 million people pass through TSA checkpoints over this past weekend in one given day, which is the highest since the start of the pandemic. Still a little bit down from 2019 levels, but nonetheless, a big, big jump. So as a result of that, United is saying that now, when in October 1st, when that pandemic aid relief funding, that federal funding expires October 1st, they're not going to have to furlough any further workers. When that last round of federal aid came in, you know, they said kind of what they did during the first round, like, okay, this is all well and good, but when this expires, we're probably going to have to make some hard personnel decisions. And that's a condition of that federal aid, is that they couldn't do any furloughs. And so they let the flight attendants know. They also let some ramp workers and some customer service agents. Of course, pilots had reached a no furlough deal last fall, so they were already protected under this for a while. But if all things continue to improve, travel continues to ramp up, we don't see any setbacks or anything like that, then United is saying, you know, we're in the clear here. We're not going to have to, make hard decisions about any other jobs. We're going to be able to keep all of our folks as is.
There was some conversation earlier on the Business Lunch, I think, about the Airbus-Boeing trade dispute. What's the status of that?
Yeah, so a lot of people were keeping an eye on this. And the U.S. and the EU, they've reached a deal, this was earlier today, to end this dispute over subsidies. And this is all about the rival plane makers, Boeing, of course, which is based here, and Airbus, which is based in Europe. There was a lot of competition there. And of course, when we were talking about tariffs, that was kind of at the center of the dispute. So that could be re-implemented if US companies aren't able to kind of compete fairly. And that was language they used in this negotiation, compete fairly with those in Europe. But I think it's a really interesting time for that to be solved. That's kind of part of the travel conversation, particularly as, you know, Boeing has had just one issue after another over the last couple of years. And some plane carriers are making decisions about, do I honor this Boeing order? Do I change this Boeing order? Do I go with rival Airbus? Things like that. So I think a lot of eyes were on this. But for now, a deal has been reached.
IKEA and other stores may still have stuff stuck in the Suez Canal.
I know. You know, when you and I first talked about that story, when the Ever Given, that big barge, was stuck in the Suez Canal, we kind of talked about, you know, I bet it's going to, we're going to see this in supply chains for a while. That's exactly what's happening. So IKEA, Lenovo, and some other companies, bicycle maker Pearson, they're based in the UK, they have products sitting on that ship. So the Ever Given, it was impounded by an Egyptian court when that happened. It's got over 18,000 cargo containers sitting on it. It has been impounded kind of waiting out the legal proceedings to see how this is going to go, because there's over $900 million of compensation claims against the ship owner. So it's just being, it's kind of sitting there like in an evidence locker. It's sitting there while this legal battle goes on. So it might be a while. Some of them really felt like we're not going to see these products anytime this year, which is really kind of fascinating to see how this one incident continues to just have this ripple effect. Unclear when that ship will be released and the cargo on it will be able to go to their final destinations.
Somebody sitting listening to you going, great, my sofa is sitting on that ship and I'm never going to get it. That's amazing to me. How ironic too, right? The idea was to free the thing up, and then they freed the thing up so that they could then just seize it and not take the stuff off. That's crazy.
Yeah. Exactly. I know. I think that's so fascinating. The idea of 18,000 of these cargo containers just sitting there, more than 18,000, I think it's 18,300, just sitting there waiting to see what happens in this Egyptian court.
And Best Buy's expanding their line of products. Is that right?
They are. Best Buy is adding luggage, outdoor grills, and patio furniture to its website offerings. They're not the first to do this. So some other retailers, we saw Lowe's, they added trampolines and some recreational gear like that and some small appliances like air fryers and even some other kind of exercise equipment. Walmart and Target, they've opened up to some third-party marketplaces as a way to kind of compete with Amazon a little bit more. But Best Buy, I thought this was very interesting. So they're going to have the products that I mentioned, in particular, because they're already in that electronic space, one of the things they're going to be carrying is Tumi luggage, but Tumi also has a line of luggage specifically for esports. So they have a gaming line of luggage. So if you're a big gamer and you go around all these competitions, Tumi has this special line of luggage, and they are going to be carrying that.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.